plant-based substitutes are in, even if going completely vegetarian is still out for many Americans. Now more than ever, people are attempting to reduce their meat consumption for ethical and environmental reasons. But in 2020, the US ate more beef than the rest of the world, consuming, wait for it, a whopping 27 billion pounds. So why is it so hard for us to give up meat? Here to help us answer that question is Victor Kumar. He's a professor of philosophy at Boston University and studies the psychology and ethics of going vegetarian. Welcome to the show, Victor.
Hi, Deepa. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I care about the environment. I care about animals not being tortured, but I eat meat. Why is it so difficult for people who know better, who care about things like that, to give up eating meat?
The main reason, I think, is just that meat is tasty for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people crave a chicken sandwich or a burger. But there's another reason, too, that it's hard to give up meat, even if you know better. And that is that it's hard to do so in our culture. We live in a culture where people don't, they haven't learned a lot of recipes for cooking tasty vegetarian food, unlike, say, in Indian culture.
You know, it's interesting. Our producer Kalyani, who is also from India, and I were talking about this, that both of us eat meat and we come from one of the largest vegetarian people in the world who make tasty vegetarian food. And yet, even in our own families and lives, we eat meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm also Indian. And although I grew up initially as vegetarian, I've eaten meat in my life as well. It's only recently in the last 5 or 6 years that I've tried to eliminate it mostly from my diet.
You know what I loved about reading it about you, Victor, is that you actually call yourself a reducitarian.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Sure, yeah. So for me, like many other people, it's been hard to give up meat. I first became a vegetarian when I was in high school, and then I kept falling off the wagon. And I was only able to stably reduce my meat consumption by not giving it up entirely. So that's what reducitarian is. It means that you don't try to eliminate meat from your diet, which is really hard, but you reduce it. You know, your first step might be to give up meat on weekdays or to eat meat only for dinner, but then maybe you can eliminate more and more meat from your diet.
Okay, Victor, so I'm going to put you in the hot seat right here because I can just hear people saying, wait, the professor of psychology on vegetarianism himself is not vegetarian and he just reduces. Why not go that extra step?
I think for a lot of people, eating meat is not just tasty, but it's an important part of our traditions and our rituals. And it matters a lot to people, including myself, to be able to still participate. You know, if I'm at a family dinner and someone has served some really tasty food, tasty meat, to indulge a little bit. Because it's true that there are these ethical and environmental concerns against eating meat, but there's also ways in which meat plays an important role in our friendships and our relationships too.
Victor, one of the things that I'm thinking about as you're talking is that, you know, I was vegetarian for 15 years and I will admit I was a snobby vegetarian and I turned my nose down at those who kind of weren't and said to me, don't you miss eating bacon? But I'm wondering if, you know, is there some part of vegan and vegetarianism that holds some kind of moral high ground that maybe the rest of us just can't really get to?
I think this is true, that veganism and vegetarianism are ideals, and it's sometimes hard for ordinary people to reach those ideals. And they also feel a little bit alienated by people who are perceived to be snobby. This is one of the big advantages, I think, of reducitarianism. It means giving up on moral purity and trying to do your best, even if it's not perfect.
Mm. And is there a cost element? You know, I feel like the meat substitutes and fresh organic produce can be really expensive. Sometimes just buying the cheap cut of meat is the way to kind of feed your family and fill some tummies and keep people happy.
That's true. Meat is cheap, especially because of agricultural subsidies that the U.S. government provides to farmers. But there are a lot of cheap alternatives to eating meat. Beans, lentils are extremely cheap, much cheaper than meat. We just don't have a culinary culture that teaches us how to cook them in tasty ways.
Well, don't despair, dear listener. We are going to be bringing you, coming right up after Victor, the ways in which you can learn to cook some of these recipes. But my final question for you, Victor, is if somebody really wants to dip their toe in, is inspired by hearing this and says, you know what, I've been meaning to do this, I'm going to go vegetarian, maybe even vegan, What advice do you have for them?
Well, one piece of advice is to find a community. I was never able to largely let go of my meat consumption until I really connected with friends and a partner who also try to have a plant-based diet. So I think it's hard to go it alone, but it's easier to do it with friends and family who are on the same team.
Victor Kumar, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at Boston University, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So maybe you'd like to try the meatless lifestyle, or at least in good reducetarian style, have a few meals a week and be vegetarian. We turn now to someone who will inspire us all to kick the meat habit once and for all. Bryant Terry is an award-winning chef known for his vegan cookbooks. You may recognize his delicious dishes from books like Vegetable Kingdom and Black Food. He joins us now to share some beginner recipes with us. Hey, Bryant, welcome.
Hi, Deepa. Thanks for having me on.
So let's begin with your recipe for roasted sweet potato and asparagus po' boy. I got to say, I started this over the weekend and the yams were a huge hit in my house. So tell us about the recipe and why it's good for people who want to start eating vegetarian.
You know, when I think about creating plant-based recipes, I try to avoid a lot of the, you know, the meat analogs, the things that are, you know, pretending to be animal products. And I rather rely on real food. And so, You know, with this particular recipe, I wanted it to be something that draws on local, seasonal, sustainable ingredients. And I talk about it sitting, you know, in between that kind of like transition from winter to spring. So really celebrating the tubers with, you know, the sweet potatoes, and I go through this process of roasting them, which really brings out a lot of the natural sweetness and, you know, helps them to just be kind of like creamy and have this delicious mouthfeel. But I thought that adding asparagus, kind of, you know, looking forward towards spring, would, you know, bring some brightness, some earthiness to it, and the combination of flavors.
And a little crunch.
A little bit of crunch, yeah.
Like because a little different consistency is kind of a fun thing in the mouth.
It's key. And yeah, this is one of those sandwiches that I often serve to people who are kind of vegan skeptical, and they have it and they're like, yeah, I think I could do this vegan thing a couple times a week if the food tastes like this.
Mm. Now, you also help, you know, those of us who might want to find creative ways to prepare vegetables to bring skeptical families along. The one I loved was this really gorgeous recipe for slow-braised mustard greens. Mm-hmm. Tell us what's special about this one.
You know, with this recipe, I brought together this tradition of slow-braised mustard greens that are eaten throughout the South that I grew up eating in my family, and this South African dish, s'more tomatoes, which is a kind of side dish condiment that's used to kind of brighten up and add some pep to dishes. And so it's onions that have been caramelized in kind of a rich tomato gravy. The when you think about the elements of a good savory dish, salt, fat, acid, heat, this has it all. You know, you have that kind of like unctuous umami flavor, the earthiness that comes from the greens themselves. And then we finish it off with that hot pepper vinegar to add more brightness and acid, and then some of the heat. And so this is one of those dishes that it's just, you know, immensely satisfying, and it's a really beautiful dish as well.
And let's finish out now your citrus and garlic herb braised fennel. Oh my gosh, that recipe just looks good. The picture looks incredible. And I have to say, I got a little put off and chose the other one because it sounds complicated, but actually, it's not, right?
It's not that complicated. There are a number of steps, but this book, Vegetable Kingdom, from which this recipe comes, was really my attempt to help my daughters further fall in love with the kind of diversity and bounty of the vegetable kingdom. And so I was inspired to use mojo, which is a kind of citrus and garlic marinade that's popular in Cuban and other Afro-Caribbean cooking, and braise the fennel in that. And then I always say that the pièce de résistance of this recipe is the plantain powder. Now, you can simply get some green plantains, pulverize them in a mortar and pestle or, you know, a food processor, and then add that to the top. And then finishing with this sancho cream, which just, you know, gives it that creaminess and the lightness. Such a delicious flavor. So this is, you know, just one of those recipes that it just blows people away, especially if they've thought about vinegar but haven't tried it before. So love that one.
Award-winning chef and cookbook author Bryant Terry, thank you so much for joining us, Bryant.
Thank you so much for having me, Deepa.